previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
God damn it, Eric. If you've ruined my chances with Mandy Moore, so help me, I will slay you.
And that's when I explained the square root of 169 is 13, and I know that because I've known that since I was 13.
So, I mean, you've killed three robot dogs. What are the plans for the fourth?
Oh, memories.
Good show. Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
I'm Eric Sandin.
And together, we can make or break you, Hollywood.
Yeah, we could. Not in any significant way, but we can do if we really tried.
It's a lot of effort. We probably won't do it, but we can.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it also is.
But we're pretty lazy.
It requires their voluntary, like, allowing us to break them, I think, as well. They'd be like, okay, you win.
I think what it really involves is something massive, either positive or negative, happening in Hollywood, and then we sweep in to take credit for it.
That's right. Like any good terrorist organization that we are, we'll take credit for that.
Whoa! You know? We actually, if we're a terrorist organization, I would say that the only people we terrorize are ourselves
and our listeners and Suncast.
But we force ourselves to watch the movies. Our listeners don't have to watch the movies.
That's true,
but they do watch this show, so we're sorry in advance. That's the title right there. We're sorry in advance.
This is the kind of quality that will get you the accolade of best podcast of 2014.
Now, we haven't all three of us done a show in, like, what, a month?
Yeah, I was out of the country for a couple of weeks. Before that, you were absent. I think we did a series of two host shows. This is the first three host show we've had in a while.
So Jonathan was deported. I was moving. And Eric was consistent. So
it's true. That's a first.
Good on you.
Hey.
I'm pretty sure there was one episode where it was just me and you, Iaz, and Eric wasn't there.
I was never on the show. I'm still not on the show.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Denial is always a good policy, just as a foundation.
Well, it's definitely plausible deniability that, you know, it's not filmed or anything.
It's not,
right.
The plausibility part, I think, is part of the problem there. I'll work on that. I'll wear a mask next time. I'm wearing the glasses and the funny nose and the mustache. So
right.
this all comes off, but can't show that.
Nice. Well, how have you guys been since it's been a while since all three of us have been on?
Eric?
That good, huh?
Sure.
All right, well, fuck me for making small talk. Jesus.
Well, so let's talk about this very important thing. Jonathan, you're not dead. Now, in the previous episode, we kind of alluded to the fact you might have died. And
well,
we were sad that you weren't available. And
considering I was on a boat surrounded by shellfish, the likelihood of me dying was higher than average.
Yeah, so
weren't even going there. I was mainly alluding to the fact that you went to a poisonous garden and somebody dared you to try something. I mean,
oh yeah, no, that was fun. That was at Alnwick Castle, historic home of the Percy family.
So, great. Spoiler: Jonathan didn't die. sorry, I guess I don't know what to say about that. I'm sure everyone's happy that he's alive. So, I've been good. Things are good here. I still got to build out this little podcast studio. I'm not broadcasting necessarily through this little tool chest, but it's still very similar. How about you, Jonathan? How was your vacation?
It was phenomenal. Loved every port that we docked at. Loved the cruise. Had great weather except when we were in Liverpool where it rained, but it was still a really good day. So, yeah, great vacation. Not relaxing because we were touring so much stuff. You know, every time we went to a different port, we had an excursion or some general plan. So we didn't have that many lazy days, but it was a lot of fun.
Eric, how was your not vacation?
Relaxing.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Well, now that we've got the niceties out of the fucking way, but before we get into the discussion of the torture that we chose for ourselves, or technically that I chose for us, I also just want to thank our sponsor, Fuck You Comcast, for the continuing issues I've experienced. Oh, let me run this one by you. So I left Atlanta on June 3rd to go to the UK for this cruise. Before I left, I unplugged the modem router combo unit that I have from Comcast. I unplugged it totally. Got back on the 17th, the evening of the 17th, plugged it back in. When I almost immediately started having connectivity issues like I had been having, but getting worse. Like, it was so bad on Monday that I had to call Comcast again because even power cycling wasn't helping. And when I was using the app just to see if I could resend a signal, it told me that I had consumed so far for the month of June 114 gigabytes. Remarkable considering that the modem was unplugged for 2 full weeks.
What the hell were you doing while you were away and unplugged? You must have an amazing system over there.
Yeah, so again, fuck you, Comcast.
That
video freeze was brought to you by Comcast. We assure you, we did not add that in post. That happened live on the show at gfqnetwork.com or gfqlive.tv if you're watching this live on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. Anyway, are we done with our sponsor? Jonathan is frozen in a happy face.
I'm done, but my connection keeps going in and out. So
that's perfect. That will give us a sense of urgency in this episode. Because now, finally, after 47 years, we get to talk about Love, Wedding, Marriage, the classic movie starring Mandy Moore, picked by Jonathan Strickland. Jonathan, you picked this movie. How long did you watch this movie before you decided to go to a second screen, have a beer, which would put you in anaphylactic shock, or talk to another human being?
18 minutes, 49 seconds.
Ooh, okay. Eric? Good.
I made it 32 minutes into this.
All right, so Jonathan, you and I were very close. I was 17 minutes and 17 seconds. Stopped for a text.
Yeah, I guess this tells us that Eric has a higher tolerance for insipid comedies than we have.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't receive text messages 17 minutes into the movie. So
now, I do have
to look down and they're like, go ahead.
I do have a paragraph of notes that I can try and get through, assuming that my connection allows me to do so. Do you want me to try?
Yeah, Eric. Sure.
It's essentially a synopsis. So here we go. Basic plot. Mandy Moore is playing Ava, a marriage counselor who gets married to her boyfriend. By the way, that happens in the opening credits. About 6 weeks later, she is shocked to find her mother wants to divorce her father. Turns out Dad had an affair 25 years earlier when the two were separated. Since Ava's personal identity hinges on the concept of romantic love, this threatens to destroy her and send her into a downward spiral of madness in which she will sever people's arteries with a jagged bone and then wear their skins as a perverse parody of a wedding dress. Probably. I don't know. I haven't finished the movie as I write this. Mostly, the film is about Ava neglecting her own marriage while she tries to save her parents' marriage. Everyone in this is doing a weird acting thing. Like, everything just comes across as incredibly fake. The jokes in the film are all kind of lame. None of them are funny. Ava discovers that her husband, Charlie, was once married in Vegas but had the marriage annulled. She's upset he didn't tell her, and also that he cared enough to marry someone else, and she says it spoils the fairy tale, which pretty much sums up her problems as viewing marriage as something magical rather than a real relationship. Ava also breaks her husband's back when she abandons him during a rock climbing exercise at marriage therapy. She got distracted by her parents and left him alone, and he fell. Thus begins Ava's descent into gruesome violence. No spine will remain unbroken. Also, we learn Ava is a bad Jew, even though she says she's not Jewish. This is the point where I mention that the character of Ava's sister is possibly the least likable character in a movie filled with unlikable, unremarkable characters. That's all the notes I had, but to sum up the summary of this movie, Ava is constantly ignoring her own marriage, trying to get her parents back together. Her husband essentially equates marriage as I get to sleep with you whenever and however I want, and he's upset because Ava's not interested in having sex with him whenever he wants. And then at the end of it, her parents get back together because of a lie. Her dad ends up going to sleep, and then she fakes an attempted suicide, suggesting that he had taken an overdose of sleeping pills when in fact he had not. He is hospitalized, and because of that, the mother ends up reconciling with the father over a lie, and then Ava realizes that she's been neglecting her marriage and agrees to have sex with her husband. The end. It is a fucking god-awful mess of a movie.
There's a I believe lot of the eloquent
that you're skipping over in there.
We'll get What's to that. Yeah. Eric just mentioned how there's some subplots you are skipping over. I can get to some of that.
Yeah,
I have my detailed notes, as I do, but Jonathan's eloquent summary of what's going on in this movie should definitely be put up on Netflix and or paste bin somewhere where we can get this, because that's a very good description. It's way better than the movie.
Yeah.
Now, Eric, do you have any notes for the movie before I delve into my, God, I had to write notes because this movie sucked notes?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much where my notes were, too, was, God, this movie sucks. Let's write some notes. My favorite was in the beginning. Charlie and Eva met when she was going to get her PhD in psych at Berkeley, and he worked in a winery in Napa. How fucking fairy tale. parents, blah, 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 blah. Oh, she randomly cancels on clients because her parents are having marriage troubles. That's just, come on. That's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that at the beginning she's counseling a couple played by Allison Hannigan and Alexis Denisoff, a real life married couple who because of her guidance decide to get a divorce.
Yep.
And they're happy to do so.
More famous people. There's that girl from Buffy and some other guy. They're a couple getting counseled. she's going to counsel her parents or something. Lots of bad jokes. Why was the delivery guy in the house? We come back to that later. There was one part that just really amused me, which was her husband in the movie is using a level at some point to like hang a picture or something. And my note was literally, this guy has never used a level in his life. Doc Brown shows up.
As another marriage counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Charlie was married before. Boring, boring, boring. The dad is partying now. Mom goes on a long trip. Killed the fish. You know, I even didn't write any notes about the subplot that I remember happening.
All right.
I guess you're talking about the dad's long lost son, the half brother.
About the friend with the Russian bride.
Yeah, Gerber. Oh, yeah. I have notes on Gerber. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there are a couple of subplots in this movie.
Yeah. Go for it.
Take it, Ayaz.
Here we go. 17 minutes, 17 seconds. I stopped for a text. Recap. I want to see Mandy Moore make coffee since it's so special, according to Charlie. He explains early on that everything she does is beautiful, makes him fall in love with her, including making coffee. They never show this in the film. Pissed me off. Mandy Moore believes in marriage because her parents have been married for 30 years. Mandy Moore's character drives a Maserati, which I thought was kind of fascinating. Of course, Mandy Moore's parents are getting a divorce since her dad cheated on her mom 25 years ago. Christopher Lloyd's in this movie. He's the marriage counselor between Josh Brolin and Jane Seymour, who play the parents. Josh Brolin or James Brolin? One of the older guy.
Yeah.
James?
Not that, but the older guy. The Barbra Streisand guy. I'll call him Brolin.
Brolin? Yes.
Brolin. Okay, Gerber is the couple's friend.
James Brolin. James.
Thank you. James Brolin. Gerber is the couple's friend. Gerber got married to a woman who doesn't speak English. Apparently, Charlie was married before. Gerber says, "Now I know why your first wife left you. Mandy Moore does not like this." Trust exercise in marriage camp. Because they go to marriage camp. Mandy Moore and Charlie with her parents are there. During a climbing exercise, a rock climbing that Jonathan mentioned, Mandy runs to her mom's aid as she's falling approximately 1 foot off the ground. She lets her husband, Charlie, drop from far up. I don't know if his back was actually broken, but he did suffer a bad fall. The girl is so wrapped up in her parents' marriage, she's not paying attention to her own. Charlie seems irritated. Drunken night out with Bradley, the Brolin, talks shit to his wife. Charlie's being blamed for bringing Mandy Moore's family closer to a divorce. Charlie wants to focus on themselves and get... my kid's in the room. Somebody want to finish that word? Get some. Now the toilet roll fight begins because somebody didn't replace the toilet paper roll. Harsh. This is Mandy Moore talking to her husband. Just so you know, I did not fall in love with you today. Wow. The Mandy Moore character has taken a turn to the female dog-like. Because this is great. I can't actually swear in this episode. Not too much. She gets breakfast in bed, and they call a truce. Allison Hennigan and her real-life husband say they're happily getting divorced thanks to Mandy Moore's advice. Time for Dad to take a lot of sleeping pills. He takes more than the recommended dose. Mandy Moore fakes an emergency. She gets rid of the remaining sleeping pills and calls the police, saying her dad has OD'd on sleeping pills. The fake suicide attempt puts the parents back together, at least in the hospital. The deli delivery guy, who is Bradley's son, shows up at the hospital. Ian is his name, and he's 25 years old. Ian's mom just died. What's-her-name is now depressed and looks at her custom bottle of wine. Oh, I guess it's Mandy Moore. She comes home to find a note from her husband on the fridge that says, "Staying at Gerber's, need some time. See." Mandy tracks down Charlie. She's still holding his Vegas wedding against him. She is really pushy. Charlie says the worst thing we did to our relationship was to get married. It's a bad thing to say out loud. 18 minutes left, and I'm falling asleep.
It's a bad thing. Say that shit quietly.
Yeah. No, I didn't say it loudly. Just say out loud. Just never say anything like that. 18 minutes left, and I'm falling asleep. And Charlie and Mandy Moore reconcile. They have a baby. Dalmit Mulrooney directed this? ? And then I have a blank bullet point.
Yeah. I will say that it makes perfect sense that Dermot Mulroney directed this, because it comes across as like a 1 hour Lifetime original movie style thing, like a made for TV style thing, and not an actual cinematic movie. For one thing, like Brolin, all of his acting choices are really hammy. Something that would seem more at home in like a sitcom and less in a movie. There's a running gag that the father is trying to reconnect with his Jewish roots when previously he had never really shown any interest in that religion. And so he's constantly engaging in Jewish stereotypical behavior, like over the top, so that it becomes a joke. And it's totally the sort of thing you would expect in a super shitty sitcom. Like one of those sitcoms that you're like, how is this even fucking on the air? How is this getting enough ratings to justify it still being made? That's how this movie comes across. It is not good at all. It's not well done. I felt bad for Jane Seymour. I'm like, I don't think of her as like an incredible actress, but she was definitely better than this material.
One of my kind of final notes, or definitely the most important note that I took on this movie, was at one point the father is drunk for some reason. I don't remember why, but he drops his fishbowl, and my note was, fuck, he killed the fish. This is the first time I felt something for anything in this movie.
You're right. Yeah. Well, see, now I was thankful for that moment where they dropped the aquarium and the fish lay there suffering, and I felt awful because it reminded me I'm not a sociopath, because I had felt nothing through the duration of the rest of the movie either.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. I think I felt for Charlie in the beginning when, you know, he kind of falls and almost dies because his wife is so obsessed with her parents when they're climbing.
Yeah.
Because she's supposed to be belaying on this climb, and she just runs over. And they make it very clear that Jane Seymour has gone one step up on a wall. So if she falls, she'll be fine. That'd be one of the first times.
I would have felt more for Charlie if I didn't think he was equating marriage with a free license to fuck whenever you want to.
I think that becomes more his character as the film goes on. Like,
it's a little bit later that actually happens, I think, too.
But I agree with you.
Maybe, but yeah, but I mean, it always seemed to me like neither character has a realistic view of what marriage actually is, right? Ava's vision of what marriage is the fairy tale representation of romance, which, while that can be an element in a marriage, is not the only thing in a marriage. And Charlie's was almost like more like a, you should be paying attention to me and we should be intimate much more frequently, whether something serious is going on in your life or not. Like, Charlie didn't seem to have very much empathy for Ava while her parents were going through this divorce. He kind of seemed like he was there to be supportive because he felt it was expected of him rather than through a genuine desire to be there for his wife. I am analyzing this way too fucking much. This movie is insipid.
This is way deeper than this film.
The way they set up the characters at all, by the way, so like we said in this movie, it's called Love, Wedding, Marriage. They start off with a thing, the title card says Love. They show the two of them, Mandy Moore's character and this Charlie guy, falling in love. Then you have the title card says Wedding. They're getting married, and then you're in the marriage for the rest of the movie. I was hoping this was some crazy experimental movie where, like, each scene is 30 seconds long, and I'm like, this is going to be over super soon. This would be amazing. Love's 30 seconds, marriage is 30 seconds, and wedding would be 30 seconds, and it's over. No. This movie's about, what, 90 minutes?
Yeah, 90 freaking minutes? Well, it's telling you, Ayaz, that marriage is a commitment, and to be committed, it's not just a commitment, it's an institution. And you do have to be committed to an institution. And you can't get out.
you can't.
Right.
Not
yes, and it seems to be interminable.
At least.
Yeah. It's an interminable length, the marriage, apparently, in this movie. And then they have a kid. So maybe there'll be the sequel. The Childhood? Child rearing? What would you call the thing? Parenting.
Take care.
Take care. Yeah, these guys.
One of my favorites was the classic, or the, not classic, the bottle of wine he gave her. One of my notes was, great, he got her a bottle of wine. Why is she in love with that? I mean, he's probably given her a metric shit ton. Because he works.
Because he, like, runs the winery?
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing, is that this is another one of those movies also that on the face of it just irritates me because all the characters are wealthy, essentially. I mean, it drives me nuts. Like, oh, rich people sure do have problems.
Yeah.
Like, I fucking care. Goddamn.
You didn't like the fact they both drove Maseratis? It wasn't just Mandy Moore's character. They both have Maseratis.
Or that her parents live in a goddamn fucking mansion. I mean,
well, they're old. I mean, it's Josh Brolin or James Brolin, that is, and Jane Seymour.
I was about to say, no, it's not Josh Brolin. If it were Josh Brolin, I would allow there to be a big fucking mansion.
I mean, do they ever say where they are? Because they have to be like
in California somewhere,
like in Napa. Like, that's where I'm assuming they are. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're not in fucking South Carolina, which, as far as I know, is the only other place where you can grow grapes for wine.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's some New York wines in Long Island, so that would be the other option. I'm pretty sure they were not in Long Island because none of the people screamed Long Island.
Grapes in southern New Mexico, but that didn't look like southern New Mexico.
So let's detour, by the way. I'm going to direct this into the character we talked the least about, which is the sister of Mandy Moore's character.
I hated her so much.
Jonathan touched upon this character. As you can hear, he hates her. Eric, do you have any opinions on this promiscuous little thing?
You know, there was so little time spent that I didn't care. I had a couple notes about her. There was one where she told the guy to correct one of the answers on like his dating survey or his marriage survey. I don't fucking know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be a joke. And my note was, is this supposed to be deadpan humor? Because I think they've missed both deadpan and humor.
I think the reason why I hated her so much is that she comes across as being so incredibly entitled. Like she's been given a job by her sister, but she essentially is acting like the job is not something that she needs to even worry about, or it's not like, you know, the job is there for her convenience. That's it. And it's just such an entitled character that it's the precisely the kind of character I fucking despise. And it's all done, played up. It's played up for laughs. Like, oh, isn't she quirky and funny? And yeah, she's a spoiled brat, but boy, she's funny, isn't she? No, she's not funny. And that's so she really just comes across as spoiled, entitled, and someone you don't want to see on screen.
Yeah, the like, I think the first time we meet her, she asks Mandy Moore to prescribe her drugs of some type. I don't remember. I just wrote drugs. And Mandy Moore is just like, no, I'm a PhD. I can't prescribe anything. And then her sister gets pissed. As if her sister didn't know this. Come on. Like,
well, no, see, it didn't
before.
It didn't directly pertain to the sister, so obviously she doesn't know it. And we realize that her memory must reset every single day, which is explains why she doesn't remember the fact that her sister can't prescribe her drugs. Yeah, there are a lot of really super cheap shortcuts in the screenplay. So everything in this movie just comes across as superficial and shallow and not entertaining or funny. And I saw a lot of reviews that specifically called out Mandy Moore and said that she was particularly terrible. I don't think she was particularly terrible because I think the material was so bad. It wouldn't have mattered how good an actress you had in that role. It was still going to come across as awful. I thought she was fine. I didn't think she was amazing, but I didn't think she was bad.
All right, let's move on to Michael Weston, who played Gerber. I know his name is Michael Weston because he played a different character on a show called Burn Notice. The lead character's name was Michael Weston. Right. Gerber, who actually has a successful marriage with a woman who doesn't speak English. Was anybody surprised by this?
I feel bad about the Russian bride thing. I think she was supposed to be Polish or Czech. She wasn't Russian.
But that's why you feel bad about it? Because you mistook the area?
Yeah, I mean, you know. yeah, so they seemed pretty good the entire time. I remember somebody falling out of a chair because they were drunk. That's about it. But it seemed like they had a pretty good relationship.
The setup for it was it was designed to make you think that the friend is just lusting after this girl that he thinks that she's super hot and that's the only reason he's interested in her, and that, you know, it's set up in such a way that you are supposed to expect this relationship to fall apart because there's nothing more than just a physical attraction on his part and a desire to get out of her shitty home country on her part. That's the way the movie presents it, by the way. That's not my opinion. So it's set up so that you as a viewer expect that relationship to fail. And then the big twist is that he takes the initiative to learn her language so that he can communicate with his wife, and that the two of them together have created a relationship that has some form of firm foundation. Although, once again, this is expressed through sex. It manifests in in sexual flirtation between the two. But the idea is that they have found common ground with one another, And that it's supposed to be a lesson to Charlie that, hey, you know, you got to work at this thing. It's not just something that happens. It's also supposed to be a lesson to Ava as well. But
neither of them get the lesson, apparently.
Neither of them get the lesson. Well, for and again, it's a very like superficial treatment of that, right? Like it's because again, it does clearly appear that it's still a very sexual relationship and not necessarily something that's founded on more meaningful connections between the two. But at least he's making a fucking effort.
That's true.
Any other notes before we put the, I guess, the final coffin nail in this god-awful movie?
I guess the only other thing to...
Comcast. Stopping Jonathan's points since 1992.
Fuck you, Comcast! Let's see if I can get this sentence out. The only other thing I would mention is that the reveal of the half-brother at the end was a completely unnecessary plot addition that did nothing to add to the film at all. It was just kind of there.
Yeah, it was weird because so I had a note about that, which is like Mandy Moore shows up at her dad's house at one point, and the dad is getting a delivery of matzo ball soup. There we go. Yeah, and the delivery guy is inside the house, and the dad's like, "Well, he's the delivery guy," and then the guy awkwardly leaves, and I'm like, "Oh, okay. Well, something weird is going on here." Is the dad gay? Possibly.
See, probably. I thought the same thing. I'm like, okay, this is that explains why he cheated and why they're not together and they finally broke up. Because that would be that's a realistic thing, actually. I mean, this has happened before, so but no, it turns out to be
It would have been more interesting if that had been the case. If they had treated it in such a way where, you know, they're still able to take a lighthearted approach to it, but explore that as a plot point, that would have been way more interesting. But no, that's not what it was.
Wait, hang on now. The way they portrayed every character, there's no way they would have played it as subtle as they did. It would have been over the top and kind of just crappy.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing is that I had the same reaction both of you had. I had the same reaction thinking, oh gosh, are they going to reveal that her father is gay? Which tells me that you know, they could have gone that route and it would have worked. Now, I should have known better at that point that certainly wasn't going to be the case because, as you say, nothing else in the movie was handled with such a subtle hand as that scene would have been. And by the way, this subtle handling was not subtle, but in comparison to the rest of the movie, if in fact it were about her father realizing he was gay and then trying to cover that up, compared to the rest of the movie, it would have been the most subtle part of the whole film. But as it turns out, that's all moot. That's not what it was about. The guy is his long-lost son that he didn't even know existed until he just showed up one day. And everyone reconciles the fact that this guy is the son from the affair that the guy had 25 years ago. And that's it. He doesn't have any meaningful role in the movie. He's barely in it. He's in it in that one scene where he's being described as the delivery guy, and then he's in it toward the end, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
It was totally unnecessary.
We should talk about really quickly what we're watching next because it's going to be amazing.
This one. Eric, don't say it's going to be amazing because I've already watched some of this.
So technically, I've watched 5 minutes of this.
Okay, so we already know your time.
Like last Sunday or something. Yeah, well, I'll go 5 minutes.
great.
We were looking for like that random movie to put on in the background, and I was like, oh, this looks great. And we started watching it 5 minutes in. Liz looks at me and she's like, this is horrible. This looks like a podcast without a pretense movie. And I was like, oh shit, you're right. and so I stopped it immediately. The film I'm talking about is Christian Mingle, which may be an hour and 3 minute long advertisement for ChristianBingle.com.
It's only 63 minutes?
Yeah. Oh, no.
First of all, it's not. You can remove the "it may be" part.
Or I'm sorry, not an hour three. 103. Yeah. Hour 40.
So more than an hour and a half.
Yeah. It's longer than the X-Men movie.
Swear words. Yes.
Yeah.
I got further than you did, Eric, already. I can guarantee you it is an ad for Christian Mingle. And also it's called Christian Mingle the Movie.
And it
stars Lacey What's-Her-Face from...
Right.
What show was she in? She was in that show with Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Party of Five.
Yeah. And the scene at the very beginning where she's on a date sets the believability factor of the rest of the movie.
I will also have to say this movie is rated PG. Yeah.
Which stands for pretty good.
Actually, do we keep track of like the ratings on the movies we watched? Because
Rock and Roll Frankenstein was rated G.
Oh, right.
Rock and Roll Frankenstein was rated G, as in, God as damn in it! Don't make me watch it again.
Yes, as in, good gosh, why?
Yeah,
different ratings. Okay, so Christian Mingle's coming up after that, which means my turn's after that.
Marriage was PG-13. That was a PG-13 movie.
What was?
Is there any swear words?
Maybe.
Love, Wedding, Marriage.
What was? Which one was PG-13?
Love, Wedding, Marriage.
Oh.
Sexual themes, maybe.
I guess so. The fish death.
Yeah. Right.
That's the question. Would you let your son watch this movie by himself?
I like him too much, but he can watch it. Yeah, but why would I make him watch this? Like, the new Voltron is amazing. He'd watch Love, Wedding, Marriage. He's going to be so bored.
Yeah.
There's some coarse language, I think, especially when they're drunk. The parents are drunk. They're not nice to each other. After Christian Mingle, my goal, which could change, is going to be Kindergarten Cop 2, starring Dolph Lundgren. Just so you're all aware.
To be fair, I've already got my next one picked out too. So,
damn it!
Oh, we're lining them up. We're getting good at this.
No,
well, it's just that when I pop on Netflix and I see the movies that are added and I see something that looks like. I'm like, that looks like it's a new level of awful. It immediately goes on the list.
So it's either Netflix is getting really good at the predictions for us, or Netflix is just getting a shittier catalog.
Does it have to be an either or?
It could be both, yeah.
So they'll like buy Back to the Future for July, right? And then they'll go, here's the worst movie ever, Sharknado 3.
Yeah. What?
Let's see. I'm going to see if I can find which movie it was that I had determined would be my next pick, because I don't remember off the top of my head. And I'm just looking at New Arrivals because I know it was on there. So you're saying Kindergarten Cop 2 will likely be your choice, right, Ayaz?
That's my goal. Yeah. Until I find something else.
Yeah. No, I understand entirely. I'm looking right now to see what mine was. The problem is that I'm not used to the layout on the website because I always use my Xbox, so it's slightly different.
We will spare this riveting content.
Yeah, no joke.
It'll be a teaser for the next episode of Podcast Without Pretense. We should look into the future. Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
God damn it, Eric, you ruined my chances with Allison Hannigan.
I was saying Time Warner is great, but then it also kind of...
We both joined Christian Mingle. It wasn't just me. Like, it worked.